first day of this topic, discussing what's at stake. I won't go over that, but everybody knows there's big issues at stake. Heart transplants, removing people from... Let's see. Yes. There you go. Make sure that's all one complete thing, right? If I didn't mess it up. It's good?
Yeah. The whole
thing is at 2:45,
so they sold it when we immediately.
Oh, it starts at 2:45?
Yeah. What starts at 2:45?
There's a meeting for everybody to phone.
Ah, okay. Pencil?
Yeah, there's a meeting during lunch. Thank
you. Doctor Pencil?
No,
I want to keep it
out. Did
you
do it?
No. Pause it. All right. So, then the second day, Monday, you discussed the, everyone is comfortable with the scientific background, with the way contemporary doctors will declare people dead. So you have to keep that in the back of your mind, because now we're going to try to derive the halacha's definition of the time of death. And this is extremely controversial, in the sense that we're going to look at the very limited number of sugyas, and we're going to see how they can be read in two different ways. Everyone can decide for themselves which they feel is more compelling. Let's start with page 9, which is the famous sugya from Yuma. I'm going to assume so no one's really looked at this, no one's really denying in it. So... you guys need another hand? I have another one. Okay. Everyone look on the top. We'll really go through this piece by piece. The Mishnah in Yuma says, Mishanafla alav mapoles, safek husham, safek enosham, safek chai, safek mes. Safek nochri, safek Yisrael, mefak chin alav saga. What's the chiddush of that line in the Mishnah? Somebody quickly. What's that all about? Anyone? I'll translate. Somebody who should have a building or a wall or some heavy thing fall down upon them, and we're not sure are they alive or dead. Or actually, first, we're not sure if they're there, right, at all, right? Because we think a wall fell down on them, right? So safek husham, safek enosham. Second safek, safek chai, safek meis. Maybe. He's there, but dead or alive. Safek, he's a Jew. Safek, he's not a Jew. The din is, you are going to take off the debris and check it out. That's the chiddush. This part of the Gemara, when it deals with what's going on with all these sveikos, is to teach you, we all know that Safek Echad is Doche Shabbos. Right? You have one doubt, you can certainly be Mechal Shabbos. This Mishnah is showing me I could have doubt upon doubt upon doubt upon doubt upon doubt.
Would that make a difference?
And then within the doubts, there's subtopics of discussion. So one that we're going to do, Yitz Hashem, actually probably the next topic we're going to do, we were supposed to do this topic now. I purposely did this because I was trying to get it before Rabbi Tender gave his big address, which happened already. That's the way it goes. But it is a very discussed topic currently.
Sorry, quick question. How do
we
translate Yinihu and
Right, I'm going to get to that line. That's the line that we're really interested in. That's the next line. But you do have to know one thing about the previous lines, is that what we're saying over here is that you could be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa, right? You can Suffolk, Pikuach Nefesh, still I could be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. What kind of Suffolk is it, Yisrael and Nachri? Good question. What's the obvious implication? If it's an Ochri, I can't be Mechal Shabbos for. Right?
Eva.
What?
Eva.
In the times of the Gemara, the Psak Bizmanenu, Eva's being used a little loosely by you, but we'll get to this topic. The Psak Bizmanenu certainly is no difference. The Psak Bizman Gemara, you'll see, it's fascinating, is there is a difference. And no one has a problem with it, including the non-Jews. And you'll see, that's going to be part, when we try to understand the Hashkafa here, when we try to understand how this is right from a independent moral perspective, should such a thing exist, right? is there an independent moral perspective beyond halacha, above halacha, is the whole discussion. But we'll have to see that it's very significant that in the Gemara's times, it was an acceptable, I could say, but I'll tell you a little bit what the Gemara says on that issue. The Gemara says, well, we could just say to the non-Jews, look, we can only be Mechal Shabbos to people that are Shomer Shabbos. That's part of our religion. And fine. Now, if he's my neighbor, that wouldn't work. If he's my neighbor, that would result, I told you the other day what happens, right, with the transplant. And they didn't get involved in that transplant. It was that Nakuda. Because word gets out like that, and you know, right away, forget it.
That was completely the opposite, though.
What do you mean?
They weren't giving to us because we weren't giving to them. Like, the logic, it's not the same logic.
It isn't? In other words, the logic...
The logic is flipped.
I don't know if we're talking about the same logic.
In other words, they're not being like, Mechal Shabbos for us, Kiyu.
Right, no, that's exactly the logic. In other words, I'm saying that Pizmanenu, I can be Mechal Shabbos for everybody. Why? The Ikar Adin, I can't, right? Which we have to understand, right? It's really Asher Yaseha Adam V'Chai Behem. And Adam is defined in this sugya, unlike other sugyas, that's what gets very interesting, as a Yisro.
Right.
Dafk. So, really, Mikar Adin, I can only be Mahal Shabbos for Yisro. Is my name, because of Pikuch Nefesh, for the Jewish people, I'm allowed to be Mahal Shabbos for everybody. On a level of Daraisa.
Because like the non-Jews think it's okay for them not to donate, or guess that we don't donate to them. But if you're not to be Mechal Shabbos, because they're not Mechal Shabbos...
Oh, I see what you're talking about. But I'm not even talking about donating organs. I was talking about the attitude of the doctors.
Yeah.
That they were not looking to help this kid. And it was that rationale. It was... okay. But the next line is going to be the one that's going to be the tip-off. Mitza'u chai. Mifach chinolav. Imeis yanichuhu. Which means you go and when the situation is completely in doubt, right? We have the unfortunate victim... there or not there, lying under this debris. So I'm allowed, until I know for sure whether he's alive or dead, to be Mechal Shabbos. Then I get there, let's say I find out, oh my God, Rahman al-Atslan, he's dead. Can I continue to be Mechal Shabbos and get him out of there? No, you can't be Mechal Shabbos just to bury someone, you can't be Mechal Shabbos because of Kavod Abrios. You have to wait till after Shabbos and then you'll get him out. But if he's still alive, keep going, save him, get him out. Which is going to be the lead-in to our question of the Gemara. Which is, what is it that indicates that he's still alive? Here's where we get into our topic. And theoretically, it would be, wow, this is the sugya to answer our shaila in total. And some like to try to present it that way. We'll see if they're being accurate or cheating a little. So, go down in the Gemara where it says, you should have brackets, I hope. Good. The first bracket, Tana Rabbanan, Adhechan Hu Bodek. How far do you go when you check it? What do you mean? Ad chotmo, v'yish omrim ad libo. What is that? Yeah, what's that machlokas? Some people say when you check until you could see or get to interact with his nose. That's a chotem. And the other sheet says no, check until you get to his heart. So now, remember the issue that is the major issue out there in the world in terms of brain death versus not brain death. The Rabbanut of Eretz Yisrael who accepts brain death, right? I'll tell you right up front, they accept brain death. Why? Because they think the definition of life and death is breathing or not breathing. If you're not breathing, you're dead. If you're irreversibly not breathing, you're dead. No matter what else is going on. Your heart can be beating from now till tomorrow. If you have irreversible inability to breathe, which is, of course, indicated by brain death. Brain death, by definition, we learned, includes that, right? Because the brain stem is out. The brain stem is what? Is the breathing part of the central nervous system. If that is dead or irreversibly damaged, you will not be able to breathe. By definition, according to the Rabbanut, you're dead. What do the people that don't accept that say? No, you've got to take into account circulation. You can't just assume because a person irreversibly can't breathe, they're dead until their circulation has stopped. So, is that the machlokas of this sugya? Yeah, well, that would be interesting. Very convenient, right? Is it the heart or is it the chotem? Right, the chotem, it's not the nose I'm interested in, right? You know, there's no perception of life per se in the nose. It's, is the person breathing? That's what's going on at the nose.
Why is it impossible to harvest organs once the heart stops beating, like immediately afterwards?
Yeah, it just doesn't work well. You know, there's a new topic, the new hottest topic in bioethics. It's really from 2 years ago, so it's not that hot anymore. But it was. was this new idea that let's satisfy everybody, and we'll do transplant after donation, after cardiac death, but what we're going to do is we're going to get it immediately, right? In other words, like, if you could really grab it immediately, then, let's say within a minute, you could make it work. You could make it work. But what do you think you need to do to have that in Metzius? So you got to do what they do, which is, in my view, the most gruesome, murderous activity. And I'm not afraid to say it on tape. Meaning, like, they anticipate. This guy's in the ICU. We think it's going in the wrong direction. That's it. Let's get him down to the OR and wait for him to die, go into cardiac arrest, and then grab it. So what do you think happens? What's the temptation? I've experienced patients, you know, in that situation, right? And what happens, look, let's say when there is a DNR, when there's an appropriate DNR, and that's a topic we'll do one day also, there is such a thing as an appropriate DNR, where you don't want to prolong someone's suffering, right? So you don't intervene. And you'll think, how good, let's put it this way, how good do you think doctors are at predicting the time of death?
Healthy.
Terrible! Terrible. We never really know. No matter how much experience I have, it's always a new case. So really what happens is it drags on, and it's like, it could be another day, another 2 days. So what happens, unfortunately...
Right, like sort of on the edge of death, like really, it's not allowed to touch them, because anything you do is going
to... The ghost is, right. Yeah. He's a flickering candle. That's you, Sean. Yes, totally. That's why you wouldn't even get off the ground up there to do that. Good point. Very good point. Okay, so but we got to figure out. Now, some people do want to say, I'm going to learn this Gemara two ways. I'm going to learn it like the way the advocates of brain death learn it, and then I'm going to learn it the other way. Okay, you tell me which one I'm forcing. Okay? I'm so biased already. I can't do this in an unbiased fashion. The only way I could do it is like I'll just do it like each shita, and you tell me where you feel I'm forcing things and where you feel I'm natural. So Tana Rabbanan, Echanu Bodek, where is the sign of death? Where do we determine death from? Is it breathing, atchotmo, or is it circulation, adlibo? So then a side point. I purposely put this in parentheses. Badak umatza elyonim mesim. Let's say you were checking, you found the top people. This is just good advice for people clearing out debris. Right, and this could be attested to by, unfortunately, many disasters that have happened in the past few years, that this is 100% true. The Gemara had good insight, probably based on experience. If you checked and you found the upper people were dead, don't assume just because the upper ones are dead, the lower ones might not still be alive. You never know. There's a pocket, right? There's famous stories about this. A pocket in the debris where people were able to survive. So the Gemara is giving you that advice. Maisa. We know from experience that don't make that mistake. That's something about Gemara you should appreciate. The great thing about Chazal, they're interested in teaching you Torah, Halacha, but whenever there's good advice, they're going to throw it in. Good, you know, living advice. And this was one of those. All right. And then the Gemara says, why don't we learn this Machlokis to be similar to another Machlokis, which is not directly related to us, about... Where is a Vlad, where is a fetus created from? From the center, from like the Tiburo, or from the top? So put that aside for the moment and skip down, because I don't want to go through all that Gemara. Go down to Aval Le'inyan Pikuach Nefesh. Everybody with me? A few lines down. Aval Le'inyan Pikuach Nefesh, Afilu Abba Shaul was the one who, in the previous little thing that I skipped, said you go from the chest as opposed from the top, right? So they're saying even he, who in terms of where the Vlad is created from, says from the middle and not from the top, he is moda de ikar chiyusa ba'ape. Here we go. This is going to get very important now. He's moda that the main source of life, the source is being used by me, but it might not be correct. It's the main indication of life is in the nose. Hu dechsiv kol asher nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav, because the pasuk tells me that life. Nishmas Ruach Chaim is in the nose, which means in breathing. And so the conclusion up till here is clearly who won between the heart and the nose? The nose. The nose, based on Xeris HaKasuv. Wow, if I'm reading this like the Rabbanut of Eretz Yisrael, the way they're reading this Gemara is, the Gemara Shaila was, Where is the true indicator of life and death? Is it breathing or is it circulation? We just learned that based on a pasuk, it's breathing. Right? Then the Gemara continues, Omar of Papa, machlokes mimata lamala. Where is there a machlokes as to where the best place to check is? That's if you started from, let's say you started checking, and you got to the person's feet, and now you're working your way up, his body. So now there's a machlokes. Do I go and stop at the heart, or do I have to keep going and go to the nose? That's the machlokes, right? That's what Papa says. Machlokes mimata lamala, ba mimala lamata, kevan de badok le adchotmo, shuveno tzarech, tchsiv, kol shenishmas ruchayim, ba'apa. Papa says, but if I'm checking from top bottom, let's say when I took off the debris, the first thing I opened up was his head. So then, for sure, just stop at the nose. If the person's not breathing, he's dead. Because, again, the pasuk says that's the surest sign of life. So what's Pashup Shad in this Gemara according to the advocates? There it is, right? It's breathing. We don't care about the heart, right? We don't care if the heart's beating or not, right? Even if it is, that's what they want to say, this Gemara is saying, even if the heart is beating, if we show irreversible lack of breathing, that person is dead. Okay, so what do you think of that reading of the Gemara, guys? Give me 1 second, I'm sorry. Hello?
Yeah. Don't we all the time find that just by sort of taking a pulse that, you know, sometimes you can't feel it?
Good. So what do you want to say? I like what you say. What kind of shot is this? Say it that way.
What kind of shot is this?
There we go. Why?
I think because I
can't
heart rate.
What's another way of understanding the Gemara? Good, good. You're saying it. You're saying the first thought that came to my mind when I learned this Gemara. I said that simplistic reading of the Gemara is ridiculous because
the person could be alive, so like
what is really the question in the Gemara? I set you
that's
up.
Most accurate.
I said, right, good. It's two of you together again, right? In other words, the question's not where is the definition al pidin al pitorah of life and death. That's not what this is about. What are we looking for? This is a practical Gemara. We're looking for where is the safest indication of life. Right?
So now
what's the giveaway? Rapapa. What did Rapapa say? If I'm going from the bottom up, what's the kasha? The kasha is I get to the heart and I don't feel anything.
Right, but that doesn't mean
does that mean he's dead? Maybe not. Why not? Because of what you're saying, right?
Sometimes you can't tell.
It's not that reliable. And especially if they didn't even have a stethoscope. Can you imagine what they're doing? Forget about pulses. Pulses will be not. I'll tell you, a person who's an extremist, there's no pulse. You're not going to get a perceptible pulse anywhere in the classic places. What we do, right, is if we don't have them monitored, and even the monitor is not good enough because an EKG could be off. You never know. You take your stethoscope. That's the only way to do it. They're using their air. You know, they're feeling it. What's going on? Is there any perception of heartbeat? You could be very much alive. I have patients who, unfortunately, are very, very ill, and they're waiting for transplants and things like that. Who you could not possibly hear their heartbeat. And certainly not in the pulse. Their hearts are gigantic, and their stroke volume. Anyone know what that means? Stroke volume is the amount of blood being pumped out every beat, right? So normally our hearts are like this big, and we're pumping out about half of what's in there, right? Somewhere between, let's say 50 to 65% in a healthy heart, right? Somebody who is very ill, right, in heart failure, their heart will be this big, right? And they're going to be pumping out about 1 or 2%. But, you know, if they go like this, it's such a big heart, that's how we compensate. So the blood moves forward and the person stays alive. I have patients that live that way. I have one now who's been like that for close to 10 years.
How
it's unbelievable. You look at their heart and you say, oh my God, I don't want to look. It's like scary. And somehow the heart manages to do it. And the physical signs of life are not there by this criteria, if that was really what was going on. So that's what the Gemara is saying. We're saying you can't stop at the chest.
But
there's a much more sensitive indicator. Where's the most sensitive indicator?
No,
we'll get to the pasuk in a second, if that's what you mean.
No.
Okay. The most sensitive indicator is breathing, because there I can use my mirror, I can use my feather, and that will be, in terms of what I'm looking for over here, which is an excuse to be Michal Shabbos, right? That'll tell me the guy's still alive. If I don't feel it over there, he might still be alive. But if I started from the top, there's no need to go to the heart because I already checked for the breathing. And if he's not breathing, he certainly has no heart. What's another reason? Aside from the fact that it's more sensitive testing for breathing than testing for a pulse, What else is true in the times of the Gemara?
Well, two things. First of all, this is a traumatic injury versus anything medical, meaning if someone has been hit by whatever it is and you don't hear him breathing, even if he has a heart rate, chances are, especially in those days, they're not going to have the type of intervention that we have nowadays.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That was the point I was looking for.
Right.
That's the other thing. Even if they're not breathing, then their heart's not beating. Like, there's no options back then like we have. You know, intubation and ventilation, because that's the only thing, if you're not breathing, the only thing that would possibly allow for the heart. In other words, there's like moments in between the two. They're not dealing with our issue. Our issue is an artificially created issue of modern technology because we're able to separate these things. Back then, it wasn't. So that also disqualifies this as an absolute right.
At the same time, though, pre-hospital care nowadays, even with regards to cardiac arrests that are from traumatic injury, it's like 0.001% make it back, and respiratory arrests also has a very, very low percentage. So I don't know if that's necessarily such a difference nowadays then, because even nowadays it's very hard to keep someone.
No, but here's the point, though. The point is that you're talking about people that are arresting, right? That percentage that you said is for cardiac arrest outside of the hospital.
Right.
It's something like that. Cardiac arrest. You know what cardiac arrest inside the hospital percentage is?
How
much better do you think it is?
It's a lot better. I remember once I had.
I wish it was a lot better.
I mean,
in the patient population I take care of, it is much better. In our patient population, being children, I don't want to scare anybody. You're all children. Right? By children, it's probably by us, since arrests are occurring in the ICU under very controlled conditions, so we do pretty good. We're over 50%, close to 70%. In the adult population, it's nowhere near that. It's more like 20, 25 at best.
With regards to traumatic,
it's not a good thing to have an
arrest. Traumatic cardiac arrest or medical cardiac arrest?
No, any type of cardiac arrest. Any type of cardiac arrest.
And the second thing is they also didn't have like simple skills like if you look at his nose or you listen to his nose, a simple readjustment of the head can cause spontaneous breathing again, possibly depending on the situation. Like, how can we take this Gemara seriously? Might have.
Right, so we have to assume that they're doing anything that they thought was possibly going to correct things in the position they were in, right? In other words, it's interesting. They're taking Chilul Shabbos very seriously, right? So the moment we know this guy's dead, I'm stopping to debris,
right?
Debris. But they certainly would be. The assumption is that we're doing everything we can to accurately check the situation. So if there's any manipulations that, in their experience, made a difference, I'm sure that they would be. That's part of it. That's assumed part of it. The bottom line is, what this Gemara really is telling me, Pashat Chat, according to what I would have read without any Rishonim, we're going to look at Rashi in a minute, without looking at Rishonim, I would have said, not like what's said by the advocates, I would have said Pashat Chat here at best is that it's just telling me the most sensitive indication of life and death, which you all seem to intuitively fall into as well. Which was good. All right, let's look at Rashi. You tell me who he agrees with, us or them. All right. So Rashi says, "Adhechan ubodek im domo lemes she'eno meziz evarav adhechan hu mefakeach ladas ha'emes." That's a really important Rashi. Anyone see something? What's in there that's very important? That Rabbi Bleich. Now you should know. In terms of this issue, is Rabbi Tendler advocate, Rabbi Bleich, opposite side. And
is Rabbi Bleich a doctor?
Rabbi Bleich is a Talmud Chacham. And he's a lawyer, so one might say he's the opposite of that. No. He's a lawyer and a doctor, but he's a Rav. He's Rosh Hashiva in YU. He is, you know, top notch. And he just thinks this Rashi is very, very important. What's this Rashi adding? Right? If the pshat was like that other pshat, what do I need this line? Im doma lemeis she'eno meziz evarav. What does that mean? I don't even get into what's the starting point that Rashi is telling me. Don't even think that you're getting a definition of life and death, your breathing, and nothing else matters. No, the assumption is, the starting point is, this person is not moving anything else. And this becomes a big controversy. What does it mean, evarav? What does evar mean?
Like love.
So, what Rabbi Tendler is medayek, and I have to give Rabbi Tendler credit, he's a great diuk over here. Let me hold up on his diuk. The first is the attack diuk. The attack diuk, meaning from Rabbi Bleich, is look, the heart is one of those evarav. So, this Gemara is not even telling me that ruach nishmas chayim ba'apav, Unless, of course, none of the organs are moving, including the heart, meaning the circulation has stopped. That's a given.
Ivaro, isn't that referring to limbs, something that's not internal?
Not necessarily. Ivaro, the organs and limbs. It's used both, all the time. Right. Ivarim she'ha'chayim t'luyim bo. It's a famous sugya.
This is what that's zuz, though. Meaning, it's not... Is that how we would describe the beating of a heart?
What bothers you about that? Because Rav Temler has a great take here. No, you're not saying it yet, but you're close. You got the right word.
You're saying that's the starting point before the machlokas, but that is the machlokas. The machlokas is you have to check if the heart's beating.
Right. I'm giving chat to Rashi. I'm not saying anything.
Rashi's
telling me. By the way, why does Rashi throw this in? He says, "Anechanu bodek," and he wants to qualify the question. He doesn't want you to think the question really is coming down to just breathing versus heart, and all you need to determine this person's dead is that those are absent. He's saying there's got to be more to it. There's something else necessary before I start declaring people dead. In other words, this is close to the Harvard criteria, right? Harvard criteria also, the first thing, we got to make sure the person's not moving, he's not conscious, right? Rashi's saying that, right? He's not moving. If you're like Rabbi Tender, you're saying, all Rashi's saying is that this person is not capable of moving, right? And that's the deal. Rabbi Tender, you'll see this is going to really work for his shita. He's very medayak on that says, She'eno meziz evarav, as opposed to saying, Ha'evarim enon mezizin. What's the difference between the way I'm expressing that?
He has control?
Yes. Because Rabbi Tendler is ultimately going to tell me the definition of life and death, which is a little different than the Rabbanut, I told you early on, is a central control of the body's movements. We're going to get that from the next sugya on the next page. But this fits so beautifully in with this, I got to hand it to him. It's such a good deal. He's saying, Rashi's emphasizing that he centrally cannot move his Eivarim. Not that there's no heart beating. That would be expressed very differently. So we got to give a good check mark to Tamar on that one. I'm very impressed with that deal. Okay, so then Rashi sets up the question that way. So Rabbi Bleich is emphasizing, you see, it's got to be the heart also stopped already before we even talk about this. Ad chotmo, the im ein chayus bechotmo, she'eno motze ruach vaday meis v'yinichuhu. So that fits with our pshat, right? Because Rashi's saying, and if you don't see any signs of breathing there, that's a sign that he's dead. Rashi doesn't want you to think that there's something special about his nose. Like if his nose is red, he's alive. If his nose is white, he's dead. That's not what it means, right? It means the breathing. That's what he's making sure we don't make any kind of mistake.
Why wasn't
it
mouth, out of curiosity?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. I think that it could have been either, but...
unconscious breathing is on the nose.
What's the pasuk? What's the pasuk say? Be'apav. What's apav?
No.
Right. And I think that's what made Chazal go with it. Also, it could be that from milamala lamata, the nose comes first.
Right, but obviously you're going... The machlokas, according to the Gemara, is only...
Right, so the machlokas... I think, obviously in Metzius, you're 100% right. There's no more sensitivity to breathing from the nose, as far as I know, than from the mouth. You're going to be breathing, unless your mouth is closed or something.
And there are people who have, like, once the nose is broken, here.
Could be the other way. Right. Could be their obligate oral duties. Right, 100%. 100%. I probably more to do with the pasuk. All right. And then, the next important Rashi. Hachi Garcin, Amar Papa Machlokes, Milamata Lamala. So he explains now what's going on. What is Rapapa getting at? So, you tell me what's special about this Rashi. Machlokes tahanach tanai, demar amar ad libo, the machlokes between these two people, where one said the heart, umar amad chotmo, and one said the nose or breathing. That's only true, milamata lamala, shemotza o derech margulosav tchila, it's only true if I'm underbreeding the person from the bottom up. If I find him, his feet first. Ubodek vaholech klape Rosho, and then I'm checking and checking, going up towards his head. Demar Amar, here, listen, here's where, is it underlined in yours?
Yeah.
Good. Demar Amar belibo yishlahavchin im yishbo chiyus, shenishmaso dofekes sham. Umar Amar ad chotmo, dezimnin de'ein chayus nikar belibo, the nikar bechotmo. What is he clearly emphasizing? Our pshat, right? He's clearly demonizing not that there's the definition of death here. We're not defining death. We're just looking for indicators of life versus death. The other thing that's interesting, that's really... Is there anything weird in this Rashi? This is a famous... Who heard of Rabbi Dr. Eddie Reichman? Anybody?
Related?
It's an Israel? I don't think so. But he's a very, very... Very good friend of mine. He is very much involved in bioethics. He writes a lot about it. He lectures a lot about it. So he went to town on this Rashi. He's very much into medical history. And he wrote a very interesting paper that involved this Rashi. Does anyone see anything weird in that Rashi in terms of normal physiology? Everybody knows how the heart and lungs work, right? What's the job of the lungs? You breathe in, you breathe out. Good? Oxygenation and ventilation, getting rid of carbon dioxide. What's the job of the heart?
Perfuse.
Right? Pumps the blood. Good. Circulation, perfusion, excellent. What is Rashi saying? The Rashi gets physiology right here. He's saying something weird from a medical perspective. He's saying...
The heart's not moving, but he's still breathing.
Well, let me read the line. Ready? Demar amar belibo, in his heart, yesh lehavchin im yesh b'chayis, we're going to determine whether there is life, shenishmaso, his breath, dovekacham. His breath.
Through the blood.
His bread. What do you mean his bread? His breath. Of course it should be his blood.
Through the blood.
Right, so, neshama, it doesn't say neshama instead of
nefesh. Here's where the academic assessors of Gemara, of Rishonim, will diverge from the traditional. Right? Now, to me, my pshat, if I want to make Rashi make sense, and assume
neshama,
that Rashi understood...
Not breath, neshama, life.
Yeah, right, exactly. Life. That's how I learned. That's how I learned. When Eddie Reichman, who he knows medical history very well, so he knew that in the times of Rashi, when did Rashi live?
10th, 11th, yeah.
Late 12th century. Late 12th.
11th century.
Right? Oh, 11th.
So, and what was going on in the medical world? What was their understanding of circulation and breathing then? This is what Rabbi Dr. Reichman, he loves to emphasize this point. He loves to emphasize that if you want to start to talk to me about the statements, medical statements of Rishonim, right, or other scientific statements of Rishonim, or Tanaim, or Amoraim, or Gaonim, then you better be up on what was known in terms of Metzius during that time period. So he says, and realize that it's going to be influenced, because unless it's Halacha L'Moshe B'Sinai, or they're dealing straight with Sora, or they're being Dorsha Pasuk, at times they are going to be dealing with what's known about reality in their time. And this is one of those, because Rashi is trying to give shot in this Gemara. What's the difference between the heart and the nose in terms of determining life? So he points out, it sounds like he thinks the respiration takes place, right? And this was the idea in the 11th century. This is what they understood back then. They didn't know about the separation of the jaw of the lungs and the heart. They understood it all as you breathe in, and the heart is involved in respiration. They thought that breath goes through your heart. Heart is pumping air as much as blood. What would happen if the heart was really doing that? Person would die. It's not one of the last things, you know, if anyone's involved in medical care, you know, everybody should be obsessive about air bubbles getting to an IV or anything like that, because it's extremely dangerous. But he maintains, and this is part of this is used by the Rabbanut, this little piece by Rabbi Reichman, as he is, so that the whole Shaila here, they want to maintain, there was never even a Havamina about circulation. The whole Shaila is all about breathing, and the Machlokis was breathing at the nose or breathing at the heart. But it's all about breathing anyway. And that's it. And what the Maskana of the Gemara is, breathing is at the nose. Because of that pasuk. But breathing is it. And breathing is the accepted definition of life and death. But you can see how you can easily dismiss this sugya. So now this sugya becomes the major ikar sugya for the Rabbanut of Eretz Yisrael. It's going to be a side sugya for Rabbi Tendler, because I'm telling you that the next one is the one he uses as his yisod. And Rabbi Blech and all the other Gedolei Yisrael learn pshat like we did. That's comforting, right? We're in the same boat. We learned the sugya the way Rabbi Yosha did, the way Rabbi Shlomo Zalman did, the way Rav Wozner did, the way all of Gedolei Yisrael learned, the way Rav Shechter, Rav Willig, let's get everybody in there, right? Everybody learned it the way we all learned it. So that's sugya number one. Sugya number two is on page 10. let's take a quick look at this. This is the main sugya at first that Rabbi Tendler used. And this is going to be one that's a little different emphasis, right? We're looking again for the Torah to give me, or Chazal to give me, a definition of the moment of death, right? So there is a Mishnah in Olos that says this, Adam eino metame ad she teitzei nafsho. Right? What's important about Adam eino metame? That becomes a convenient marker for the moment of death. When is a body metame? The moment of death. So whenever the code word in the Mishnah for the moment of death is, at this point, this body is able to be metame people. Right? So this Mishnah is defining when that moment, different situations, whether it fits. Right? So the opening line is, when the neshama departs, that's when it's metame, that's the moment of death. When is it not that time? That's what we're going to have now, examples. Afilu meguyad, bafilu goses, right? What does meguyad mean? You're like cut in mamish in half. Afilu goses, which is the individual who has very little time left, who we shouldn't be touching because he's like a flickering candle. Zokek liyabum, upoter mina yibum, meaning he's alive. Machil betruma, right? Uposel betruma, these are all halachic ramifications of being alive. V'chein behema v'chaya eina matmein ad sheteitzei nafshem. And not only is it true for an animal, but for a person, it's true for an animal. They're not matame as an avela until the moment of death. And here's the key. Hutaz rasheya. What does that mean? Hutaz means they're decapitated. Hutaz rasheya. Af al pi she mefarchasim tamein. What is mefarchasim? Anyone know? Even though they're...
Twitching.
Spasms. They're still metame, meaning they are still dead. Right?
A person can twitch after they're dead.
What? A human? Yes. Absolutely.
Like the super
human. But what's thinking about what I told you before about Rabbi Tendler and his definition of what the moment of death means. So what's different about spasming and our normal movements? What's the difference?
Voluntary. That's what he was saying.
No.
Voluntary
is not the
thing. Yeah.
Because if I elicited a reflex from you, right? Where do reflexes come from?
The spine.
It's in the spine, right? There's nerves that come out from your spine and they give you the reflex. Right? So the point is that it's going to be the idea that Rabbi Tendler is going to develop here is that decapitation is the definition of death based on this Mishnah. Right? I would have thought, oh yeah, because you know, you don't have your head, you know, you just bled out, there's many, you're not going to be breathing, you're not going to be doing much, right? He says, no, what we're learning here is something different. The key is that the movements of the body are no longer centrally controlled. There's no living organism. There's just organs that may be alive themselves, right? But they don't have a central control, therefore they're not a live being. And what would be the organ that he's really getting at here?
Heart.
The heart. Exactly. Hutaz rasheyan, the heart can continue beating. In fact, you take the heart out of the body and it can continue beating. The heart has independent, it is the only organ capable of independent motion. Right? I remember when I was in medical school and we had to do these disgusting things. Not to turn anyone off. I didn't have to do it. I actually got myself into it somehow. I was doing experiments on sheep and I was looking at their hearts. And the first part of the experiment that I was given the lowly medical school job to do was to get the heart out of the sheep, keep it beating, you know, I put it in a solution until we could begin to work on it. And it would beat on and on and on. And I saw, you know, and if anyone ever goes to an open heart surgery, you'll see that as well, especially if it's a transplant. Take the heart out, still beating, because it's able to do that. So that's what Rabbi Tendler says. He says, don't talk about the heart. The heart means nothing, because the heart could be beating even without being in the body. So he says, Hutaz Rasheyam, it's telling me though that once there's decentralization of control of movement, then you are dead. And who's the one who said this centuries ahead of medicine, centuries ahead of his time? The Rambam. Unbelievable Perush HaMishnah of the Rambam. The next Makor is from the Perush HaMishnah of the Rambam. Listen to what the Rambam says. It's unbelievable. This could have come out of a 20th century medical textbook. He says, on our Mishnah, he's saying, Alpha P Shem, when a person has, when Hutash Rashayim, when the head was cut off and never, and still there's spasms and movements, still dead. I didn't read the ending of the Mishnah. Kigon Zanav Shalata'a, like a lizard's tail. That's the common one. If anyone ever saw a lizard's tail get cut off, it's still going to wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. So the Rambam says on that, go to the place where I underlined it. He says, Va'omnam Yikrize Liksas Mine Balichayim Kasher Lo Yah Koach Ha Matnua, right? The motion, the power of motion, mitpashet bichlala ever ha'evarim mishoresh v'hatchala achat, when the power of motion in the different organs does not stem from a single unified source, aval tiyeh misparedes b'chol aguf, but it's just spread out because any muscle can twitch on its own, including the heart, including skeletal muscle. That's not life. That's not life at all. And this becomes Rabbi Tendler's, I don't want to call it obsession, but it is. This becomes Rabbi Tendler. He says, this is definitely sound science, he feels, and it's the Rambam and it's Chazal telling me this is the definition of death. So the definition of death is brain death. In other words, that now here becomes the big shadow. Decapitation means what? Pashup shah, cutting off the head. So Rabbi Tendler says, Mali cutting off the head, Mali physiologic decapitation, meaning the brain no longer communicates to the body. Isn't the same idea the Yisod of the Rambam upheld? Right? In other words, physically the brain and head are all attached, but this person has no circulation going to his brain. He has no endocrine function, hormone function, going from the head to the body. If there's no interaction between the brain, central nervous system, and the rest of the body, that meets this definition. And that's what he says he thinks should be the definition of death, why Harvard criteria and Mamish are exactly that. That's what we're showing. We're showing that there is no communication between the brain physiologically and the body. Now, what else would be necessary, at least Rav Moshe Feinstein wanted this also, was that imaging study. This is why Rabbi Tendler needed the imaging study, because what's the only way of really proving this? You have to show there's no circulation there. If there is circulation, then there are no brain death. So that's why, originally, that was an important part of his requirements to declare somebody brain dead. You have to show also that radionuclide study with the hole in the head, which is going to be the source of tremendous debate, how accurate it is. No one ever does it anyway. I can just imagine telling the ICU to do this. They would think I'm out of my mind. It's just not commonly done. All right. So we have to stop. But what I wanted you to see, I'll mention it quickly so that we can even move forward a little faster, is this. There is a discussion in the Gemara in Cholim that's at the bottom over there, also of the Sutas Rashayim. They get into the Sutas Rashayim, exactly what is meant by this. And they give a whole description of possibilities. One of them turns out to be another great raya for Rabbi Tendler that he uses. Can anyone think of a story in Tanakh of somebody who was declared dead on the basis of a, let's say, broken neck, meaning, and he had physiologic decapitation, but intact. It wasn't mamish decapitated, right? But the pasuk, the psukim, describe him as being dead because he had sort of a break in the communication between his head and his body.
The boy in Roshi,
Yeah, that's something else. Take a quick look. Just take a quick look over here in the Gemara. Right? Amar Yehuda Mar Shmuel Nishpara Mafrechas Verov Basar Ima Matame Ba'Oel. First statement in this Gemara is, in order to be considered Matame Ba'Oel, which is a co-word for
death,
you have to have broken the spine. Mafreket is the spine. Verov Basar Ima, and most of the supporting musculature around the neck also has to be torn through. Then Matame Ba'Oel. The Im Tamar Oso Masa De Eli, who is Eli?
He fell off the chair.
What happened to Eli?
He fell off the chair backwards.
Right, pasuk right over here. But he can skew the siren of the king. Right, remember when he hears about his kids?
He falls.
No, that was the, that was some of the musr of that story. Oh, yeah, yeah. Right? His kids didn't. You know, his kids were not such great guys. But when he hears about the Aaron, suddenly he fell back. Right, and the way the pasuk describes him is that vatishabem mafrakto vayamas. But he didn't get decapitated. So that's why they're questioning that previous opinion. There's no cutting through his musculature or anything like that. So it says, Zokin Shami. An old person, you don't need the full decapitation. But what do we have here? This is something...
An old person?
What?
What did it say, an old person?
An older person. In other words, he was very old. He was like, you know, think of him as a 99-year-old man. So he fell over and he broke his neck. It doesn't have to be cut off. That was enough to say that he's still dead based on a broken neck. So Rabbi Tendler wants to make the argument, Eli is a great raya that you don't need actual decapitation. Okay? All right, we have to see where we go with this and what's the response. And we'll take it up, Yitz Hashem, on...